Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's a humbling award. It's one that, a reflection of our Chicago Bears family. This represents all of us. You know, we always talk about it being a me award. This is a we award. This is about all of us together. Our team, our organization, our coaches, our support staff, the entire organization.
We greater than me. You know, Matt Nagy speaking when that gets said into a microphone. Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski, Mark Grody with you. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Spent a couple hours talking Super Bowl and all the fun that entailed. One thing that happened over the weekend that we are yet to discuss, Bears head coach Matt Nagy named the NFL's Coach of the Year. After taking the Bears from worst to first place in the NFC North and leading them to a one-and-done playoff appearance, but it was based off of the regular season. And I know you, one Mark Grody, have thoughts on the NFL Coach of the Year award.
Yeah, he had 24 votes, did Matt Nagy. The Chargers' Anthony Lynn had 10. The Colts' Frank Reich had 8. Andy Reid had 5. Sean Payton had 1. I know I'm missing somebody, but that was the basic rundown of those guys. Obviously, the Bears had an unbelievable revelation of a season this year, and they have picked the right head coach. The Bears were 12-4, largely because of defense. And I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve it because the defense dominated this year for the Bears. I thought it takes a special kind of head coach, especially when he's an offensive mind, to turn it over to the defense and say, this is how we're going to win games. And he enabled his defensive coordinator to be great. So I think Matt Nagy is a terrific Bears head coach, but it's such a ridiculous award, and probably not only in the NFL, but in other sports too, because it's always based on turnaround teams. It's based on teams that go, like the Bears did, from last place to first place, or get a bunch more wins than they did in the previous year, or turn a team around. It never really goes to the best coach in the NFL, because the best coach in the NFL this year was Bill Belichick, and it probably has been for a lot of years. It's ridiculous when you look at this award and you say, and I think a lot of people do say, and I'm not going to disagree, that Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. Shep, he has won 3 Associated Press Coach of the Year awards in his life. 3 for a guy who gets the genius tag and for a guy who has 6 Super Bowl titles in this era. So, you know, without trying to take too much away from Matt Nagy, because he's great and I like Matt Nagy a lot and I'm going to be around him a lot, but it's just kind of a ridiculous award when you think about who it goes to in the NFL and in all sports.
Yeah, I fully agree with everything you kind of say about it right there. Like, I think of this award, I think this is a perfect example of what Coach of the Year awards are. Doesn't matter if it's baseball, doesn't matter if it's football, basketball, hockey, whatever. It's the team that you didn't think was going to be great that ended up being either a playoff team, a title contender, whatever it was. They had the biggest turnaround, and always that's who wins Coach of the Year. They did a phenomenal job this year, and it's usually a guy in their first or second year. For instance, Mike Krzyzewski, you would say pretty successful college basketball coach.
Your Duke head coach.
Has done okay. He has won national titles here of recent note. 2015, Duke won it all. In 2010, Duke won it all. And in 2001, Duke won it all. Mike Krzyzewski, for instance, in those years, all those years since 2001, has not won an ACC Coach of the Year award, despite
really
winning national championships.
He's got 0.
It's like, okay, because your team's Duke, because they're always seen as the hated team and great, they can't possibly win that award because the expectation is you're going to win every year. Like, okay, because he has great players and he has great what else? Does it take away from the job Krzyzewski's done because he recruits and is able to land top talent to Durham, North Carolina? Like, does that mean that he's done less? Like, I have trouble believing that somewhere in that 18-year run that Mike Krzyzewski wasn't the best coach in the ACC.
It's a ripoff. It's a ripoff for these coaches.
Dave Lato pops up on here. I mean, Tony Bennett, I mean, anytime Virginia basketball wins anything, I don't like it because it's hard to watch.
Slow-moving
like,
Vi.
My God. It's like that seems a little bit empty feeling when you have the greatest or one of the best coaches in college basketball history can't win his own award in the ACC.
Yeah, and it's funny because I would say that we are guilty. I'm sure I have been guilty at times as well because we perpetuate this by thinking of it in those terms. Like when we start to throw it around like as we did at the end of this Bears season, everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's got to be Nagy because the Bears sucked last year and now they're really good, so it's got to be that guy. But I just wish the writers, the Associated Press, and whomever that consists of would look at it a little bit more closely and actually pick who was the best coach in whatever sport it is, and in this case, in the National Football League. And maybe it was Matt Nagy, pound for pound. Perhaps I'm not ruling out the possibility that it was him, but my guess is that, you know, It could have very. How about Sean McVay? You know, this is a guy.
Boy genius.
Well, just because they were good last year too, there's no way Sean McVay, who got his team into
wipe
the
it clean.
Super Bowl,
that's
who,
right,
right. Who could? Yeah, wipe it clean. Like you're coasting now. You're not getting this award anymore. That's not going to happen. Did Phil Jackson ever win Coach of the Year? Maybe he did like his first year.
He had to have when they won 72 games, didn't he?
Yeah. See, now that's like, the thing. Like if he didn't win that, then that's an absolute ripoff. But there probably was another team in the NBA that year that maybe
he
also
won one Coach of the Year award.
It was
award
a 72.
Ever. It was a 72 and 10 year.
See, that's crazy. That's crazy.
He had to have the best team in the history of the NBA in order to win Coach of the Year.
Right. And at some point in time, yeah, and I get it. I get it. And that's a whole another topic, too, to discuss, like, you know, what was Phil Jackson able to coast because he had the talent, because he had Michael Jordan on his team. But at some point in time, you do have to give a guy like that a little bit more credit for the things that
he
does.
This year's the perfect example. Look who just won the Super Bowl yesterday. And I know it's a regular season award, so you don't take that into consideration. But this was the year that, okay, what happens in September? Oh, Patriots are falling apart. Slow September. September dragged into October, and the Patriots were still running in mud. Got into November, and they didn't look like the Patriots. Sure as hell, end of the year, New England's playing in a home game on divisional weekend, winning, beating the hell out of the Chargers in that. It's like, if this wasn't Bill Belichick in perhaps his best coaching job that he's done there for a team that played with Rob Gronkowski, who's been, I mean, hardly a bit of what you expect Rob Gronkowski to be, like the biggest stars they have offensively, at least for threats to Tom Brady to throw to. Like he was next to non-existent for most of the year. He still wins the division. He still gets a first round bye, ends up winning the damn Super Bowl. Like, oh, nope, he's Belichick. It's the Patriots.
Right.
Kick him out
they
of
got Tom Brady. So.
Kick him out of consideration from the get-go because it's too good to start. It's like, well, oh, he did a hell of a job, and it doesn't even get considered.
Yeah, and you can
he got Josh Gordon on the field.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it for me.
That he was able to still coach through
Josh Gordon.
Having had Josh Gordon on his team.
And was really productive.
Yeah.
That's Coach of the Year material for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's you could actually see, like, it's difficult, I think, for people to actually see coaching moves that are made throughout a game and things that are exploited. But Bill Belichick does that, it seems like, especially in the biggest of the games and even in the Super Bowl yesterday with some of the defenses and some of the zones that he was giving to Jared Goff and some of the looks that he, like, you could actually see the coaching that takes place out of somebody like Bill Belichick. I mean, Tom Brady did not have a great game yesterday. Tom Brady was not bad or anything like that, but that's a Bill Belichick over Sean McVay win yesterday. Like,
oh,
if
God,
you want
yeah.
to really single it out. So, and I get it that the vote, I don't know, there's no voting, obviously, in the postseason. They don't take that into account, but I think there's a whole bunch of games during the regular season that you could take into account as well with Belichick.
Yeah, I just don't know how you, he doesn't get consideration for it because, oh, he got Brady. Stop, it's the Patriots. They're expected to be there.
Their division sucks.
Yeah. It's like, well, their division sucks because they beat the hell out of everybody in it year in and year out.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, well, the Dolphins aren't any good. Well, yeah, because the Lions are a traditional powerhouse in the NFC North. The Bears get to beat up on or whoever else gets the beat up on. Like, it's, I think it's kind of hilarious, but I think you bring up a good point on it. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Text messages always welcome as well. 67011, that it's just the award for being an overachiever. It's as simple as what it is.
Right,
it's so like, we were wrong about you in the preseason.
Yes.
The media looks at it, and we were wrong. We thought you were going to be bad. You were good. You're only eligible for this award. Bill Belichick, you're the Patriots. We thought you'd be good, and you're here? So what if you lived up to expectations? That means nothing.
I am.
Even if your expectations are as high as they can possibly be. It's absurd. Just flat out absurd to me.
Sheppy, the, you mentioned the NFC North. When you, are you... Do you rule out Detroit for next year, too? I mean, I look at it as it's the Bears. I still think the Vikings are right there with the Bears.
Talent-wise, yeah.
For that, for the division next year.
I look at the Vikings. I thought that they were going to be – I was wrong about Kirk Cousins. And I'm happy I was wrong about Kirk Cousins. But I thought that them having consistency at a quarterback position, something, stability they haven't had there for years, like, that's going to be beneficial for them. They're going to know who their starter is each and every week. They're not going to be living and dying with Teddy Bridgewater, turning into Case Keenum, turning into whatever other guys they were throwing out there. Kirk Cousins is disastrous when the bright lights are on. Like, he stinks. And so I think that's a very limiting factor with them. But the rest of the team's still so good that I don't think you can just push them to the side. I just don't think that there's this all of a sudden bounce back, because I think that there's enough of a sample size on Kirk Cousins that says that he's going to come up short more often than not when it matters most. But, like, I don't know. I look at the division, and, yeah, it was fun to talk about it the day after the Bears beat the Packers and they win the North, they clinch the North, and that was great and all. But I really do think that was a shifting of the tide in the NFC North. Like, when Roquan Smith deflected the pass that was intercepted by Eddie Jackson, it's like, that was symbolic to me, coming off of Aaron Rodgers' hand. It's like, okay, well, that's the symbolism that I need. I think that this is a Bears division that they're going to be as talented, no, more talented, even if by slight margins, than everyone else in the division for the next 2 or 3 years. They're set up to be that way. The way, yes, they have the young quarterback who's cost-controlled right now, but they also have a defense that, outside of the safeties that we were talking about, outside of Bryce Callahan and Adrian Amos, that's a defense that was top-tier this year and should be the next couple of years, because guys are simply under contract.
I'm so anxious to see, too, and we were talking about it with Hub Arkish earlier, so anxious to see if Trubisky does take the next step, because even
to the next step.
Exactly. And Nagy even conceded, look, the next year is about taking the next step. And if you want to get really specific about that, that is Mitchell Trubisky being able to do a better job of reading defenses and, you know, just making the right decision in an RPO, or making the right decision in an audible. And he started to get better at that at the end of the season, but that's still a work in progress. And I think that's going to be the difference maker for Trubisky going forward. If he can conquer fully the Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich style of that particular offense, that's really exciting to think about, because it's going to be really hard for the Bears defense to repeat what they did this past year, because it was a great elite defense. They might, I mean, the talent is there, but it's kind of unrealistic to think that, yeah, they can match that and have the pick sixes that they had at the Eddie Jackson season, the 7 interceptions for Kyle Fuller. I'm sure you could expect 12.5 sacks out of Khalil Mack. I do think that is realistic, but it's fun to think about the possibility of the offense, if they get that extra step where they could pick up the slack if the defense does have a down game and they can win games for you, as opposed to the way it was this year where the defense won 12 games for the Bears.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it was. It wasn't the offense that was outscoring people.
Right. I mean, there were some great moments for the offense.
Buccaneers game, Lions game, where Trubisky ends up getting a player of the week.
Like, yes.
That was fun and dandy and all. But
right.
This was a team built solely, not solely, but its strength was its defense.
Yes.
And it can still be its strength. But if the offense improves and gets to be more of that top third type of offense in the league, then you're cooking with gas.
Right. Then it's lookout time for the NFL and for the Bears. And I also think that they have the proper amount of hunger going into the season, and players are at the right age. I mean, the way that they were eliminated from the playoffs, that's going to keep them properly motivated going into the season. And then you have enough guys, like a good mix of guys that are in the middle of contracts and are getting toward, like somebody like Leonard Floyd, who they're going to take care of, it looks like. It's just like when you go through all the different, Matt, like the talent base, the age base, the having lost last year, contract spots, like they are at the exact point of proper motivation heading into next season.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. As we discuss the Bears, their outlook for 2019, we talked to Hub Arkish about an hour ago. He said that in terms of the NFC, he doesn't see someone, not to say the Bears are far and away like the one with the best case, but nobody has one better than them in terms of what their roster should look like and what their expectations should be for 2019. And I mean, it's nice to have this feeling back of like, it used to always, not used to be, the last few years it's been, okay, well, yeah, football season's over and we'll wait for the NFL to get back. Not so much for the Bears to get back because they've been so bad. Now it's, all right, what's going to be the next move? Who's going to be the middle-tier free agent that the Bears can afford that they're going to bring in that we're going to react to and be excited about or disappointed that they signed for 6 weeks during the spring and into the early parts of the summer? And who's going to be the third-round draft pick when the Bears finally pick 84th overall or whatever it ends up being this year? Who's that going to be that we sit and dissect in every practice out in Bourbonnais for all summer long? Like it's nice to have that back because, damn it, it has been a while.
And it also stunk because we're just talking about the division. It also stunk that everything started with the division for the Bears, and you knew going into the season that you had no chance in it because of the quarterback that played for the Green Bay Packers and the talent that existed with Minnesota, and that, well, Detroit is just always, you know, you can never figure out that franchise. But, you know, it starts right there in the division, and it's nice to know that they have taken that next step beyond, whereas before you just it started with not having a chance because of the division that you were in.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767. You want to talk some Bears? We'll do it with you next on 670 The Score. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Mark Grody with you, taking up until 10 o'clock tonight here on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Julie DeCaro will be here following us this evening, starting up at 10. And sorry, that's tomorrow. Julie will be here from 10 until midnight. Brad Underwood show at 10 o'clock tonight. Catch it while you can.
Yeah.
And then Les Grobstein coming up at 11 o'clock. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Mark Grody with you. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. As we talk a little bit about the Bears there and just the silliness of the Coach of the Year award and everything with that. But, I mean, expectation-wise, it's not going to be like NFL is a weird sport and football is weird and injuries happen and all that happens. But like this feels so much to me like it did between 2005 and 2006. Like that was your arrival year in 2005, second year under Lovie Smith where they turned the tide and things change with the Bears. They win the division and sure they lose the home playoff game against Carolina. But it's like the expectation was going into that following year, the Bears should be, if not the best, one of the two best teams in the NFC next year. And I can't sit here and say I think otherwise because based off of this, based off of growth of offense, based off of a great defense that's mostly intact depending on, I mean, no matter what happens this offseason, it's going to come back largely intact next year. Like you expect a bounce in performance based off of that, and all of a sudden, voila, you are already a 12-win team this year. There's not a whole heck of a lot further to go in terms of wins and losses and then playing home playoff games, even though you just lost one. But, yes, the expectation should be this high, and it's about damn time.
There is legitimacy to this team. Like, it was a real 12-4. Like, sometimes you could look at a team and say, like Lovie Smith's last year, there was a 10-6 team for the Bears that didn't make the playoffs, and that's ultimately why Lovie Smith lost his job. But it didn't feel like a team that was four games over 500. This Bears team did feel like it was a team that was 12-4. There wasn't a lot of fluky that went into it, and you could actually see like the talent is real and the talent is sustainable, barring any kind of injury. So that's the part that has me excited. Like I always think back to the 2001 Bears, the year that they played the Philadelphia Eagles, they were 13. I think they were 13-3 that year. That was the Mike Brown year where you had the back-to-back weeks of the walk-off
right.
picks.
49ers into the Browns.
Uh-huh. And then the Bears, yeah, it was a great year. It was Urlacher's first or second.
I think
you still had a Roosevelt Colvin and a Warwick Holdman.
Second year for Urlacher, I think.
Right, you had Ted Washington.
It was Anthony Thomas's rookie
year.
Yes,
the A-Train.
Rookie of the year, beating out LaDainian Tomlinson.
Right, see, and that's a great name to use, right? It's symbolic of that team. A-Train did not turn out to be sustainable.
Oh, no.
And I was really excited when they finally...
Wheels came off the tracks in year two for old Anthony.
They sure did. It was a wreck for A-Train.
Do you remember the Anthony Thomas bobblehead?
I don't.
It was very unfortunate.
It was bad.
I'm pretty sure somebody got fired for it.
Really?
They deserved to be fired.
Something anatomical?
It didn't look like Anthony Thomas
really?
At all.
Okay.
It was bad.
I don't remember that, but I do remember the evolution of A-Train that year and how everybody, who was the guy that was starting the year, the running back? James Allen.
He had the
James
Hail Mary Allen. Catch against the Browns that set up the Mike Brown.
Oh,
pick six.
You're a recall, man.
Remember that.
Yeah.
I remember where I was watching that game at my grandpa's.
That's awesome, man.
That's right. Oh, they're going to put him in the Super Bowl after this. Like angry-ass father and grandfather to just both despise the Bears.
Oh,
and then there's
man.
Me cheering my ass off.
Good for you. The 2000 was actually, because I was just, from a fan's perspective, one of my favorite Bears season ever, just the regular season, just because of what Mike Brown did. But the point is that then they went into the playoffs that year. They get smoked, you know, by Hugh Douglas and the Philadelphia Eagles. Jim Miller gets hurt. Jim Miller was the quarterback, and Jim Miller had a good year. But he got hurt. It turned out that simply wasn't sustainable. Like, it wasn't legitimate, with the word I use. A-Train was not sustainable. Roosevelt Colvin left, I think, for the Patriots, I want to say,
yeah.
after that year. Warwick Holdman, I don't remember hearing from him again.
Remember where Warwick Holdman ended up.
Was he of the Redskins?
That sounds right. Now you say that.
Possibly. I love that. Like that.
Yes. Oh, he went to Cleveland and then Washington. 1 year in Cleveland in between.
They did the stupid comparing that defense too to the 85 Bears. That was like they did that whole dumb thing.
Washington.
Yeah. Ted Washington and Keith Trailer.
That's right.
Those guys
the
were
iconic
terrific.
Moment of the year was
yes.
Keith Trailer running down the sideline against Jacksonville on the interception.
And
he ran out of gas on.
Like that I at the time I thought it felt sustainable. And I was like, oh wow, they got a great formula. You got the two fat guys up front, and
right.
you
we're
got,
on their last NFL legs
yeah.
at that point.
yeah, exactly. But that's me when I'm thinking. And you have this great core at linebacker, led by Brian Urlacher, and the other two guys. You got A-Train. It felt sustainable, and it certainly was not. But that brings us back to present day. That this does feel like it barring injury, that this is real and this will continue to go on. Like, I can't, like, was there, like, there's only spots where you can get better. Like, they're probably going to get better in what they do with running back. I don't know if Jordan Howard will still be a part of it.
Sure.
I think he probably will be a part of the team because it'd be dumb to just get rid of him for the sake of getting rid of him. And that's what you, in essence, would be doing because you're not going to get a lot for Jordan Howard if you were to trade him at this point. So I just feel like that there's, as Pace said, that there's just going to be tweaking and refining in this offseason and making spots that are maybe just okay even better. So that's a really good outlook for this Bears team.
Yeah, it definitely is. Bottom of the hour being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Now that the big game is over, it's time to focus on winning hockey. Chicago Wolves are off to one of their best starts since their last championship. Wolves have 5 February home games, all against teams over 500. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. Text messages always welcome as well. 67011 is where you go with those. But yeah, the sustainability ended up not being there. It was almost like, all right, well, yeah, that went south in a hurry. And I guess that, like, back then when you went into a season and your quarterback options were Jim Miller and Shane Matthews and all of the sort, like, it's not really surprising that ended up the way that it did and sustainability wasn't a thing. But it looks at this point of Mitch Trubisky. I thought that he got better as the year went on. I thought that I, from a fan's view, I trusted his decision-making. I trusted his confidence and him being able to look off a receiver or looking off a safety here or there. That's something he didn't do early on in the season. I mean, the Green Bay game, what was the tweet that went around of, I forget who was standing under in the end zone, and
Mitch
said in the press conference, I didn't see him. Well, maybe it's because he was just sticking out that much that
right.
You lost him in your sight. But I thought that he got better with that as the year went on. And I think that based off of, like, Patrick Mahomes jumps into the starter role this year and he turns into the MVP, and people look and, oh my God, well, he's not Patrick Mahomes. Okay. Well, it stinks that he's not Patrick Mahomes. But guess what? Most quarterbacks, when they jump in and play in the NFL, they don't just hit the ground running or sprinting like Mahomes did their first year in a system. Like, most of them, there is a development that goes along with it. In Trubisky's case, where he had such little college experience, played his rookie year in an offense that is nothing like this offense is, like, there will be more growth the more secure and more experience he gets in this. And there's reason to believe that I don't think he's going to be ever, like, all pro year in and year out, but he should be pretty damn good.
Yeah, I thought that there certainly were inconsistencies throughout, you know, this season for Trubisky. But, yeah, I think that because of the fact that he's so earnest in his desire to be really good, I mean, I get that this kind of stuff can go in one ear and out the other for fans, but with the whole, like, you know, spending so much time, you know, he's a gym rat of football, basically, is Trubisky. And I think that as he continues to learn the offense, and as those players around him, like guys like Allen Robinson and Trey Burton, as they start to get more comfortable with him, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, we know Tariq Cohen is turning into a straight up star. I mean, you know, he was this side of Trubisky. Tariq Cohen was the most valuable player on that team. So yeah, it's like I said, it's exciting to think about the development. And one other thing too that drives me crazy is the run shaming that goes on with Trubisky. Like, people say, like, people, it sort of insults people's football sensibilities if you have a quarterback that, and Hub talked about it earlier, about him, you know, running out of the pocket to make play. Here's the thing. Like, I get it. Like it's probably better to stick around and maybe look for a receiver downfield. But when you have a guy with that special of talent, those special legs, like, to be able to do what he does, one of the best in the NFL right now, if you can get 15, 20-yard chunks with the guy's feet, it's okay to do that right now. It's okay to do that for the next few years. Ultimately, you probably want him taking a little bit more time in the pocket and trusting the offensive line or accepting a sack. But right now, if you have that as a weapon and defenses have to account for that, I don't want him to ever be talked out of that.
Yeah, like, it's a weapon. And yeah, you don't love it and the sustainability of it. You question, okay, how much, if he's going to take extra hits, even if he is sliding, he's going to leave himself vulnerable to that. Like, how much can you allow him to do it? Well, it's a strength of his game right now. And how many times on third down did he, like, his decisions, not only to run were, okay, don't throw the ball into coverage, don't risk it getting taken away, but it was also, this is the best option, and I know that I'm damn good at it, and I'm
it's okay to do.
Quick, I can make guys miss, and I can, like, it's such a valuable part of his game that, I don't know, you can't just have, okay, you got to be a pocket passer.
Right.
No,
I
it's not the
that.
Way the NFL's played anymore.
Exactly.
Like, it shouldn't be shamed for, like, that's the strength of his game. Russell Wilson, like, yes, I know he doesn't run like he did at the start of
his
career.
But that's a great example of a guy who, when he was in
but
the prime of his running.
But he knows when to still.
Yes.
Like, it's not like an offense built around it, but he knows to pick and choose his spots with that. And when he decides to tuck things down, it can be lethal when you play that offense.
Right, we're not talking about, like, 3 or 4 yard gains like most quarterbacks lumbering do.
Right,
just
it's not like
back
a Tim
to
Tebow on a keeper to get 4 yards in a first down.
Right,
it's
right.
Oh, all of a sudden it's a chunk play 25 yards downfield.
Yeah, even if you are abandoning, let's say Taylor Gabriel is open on a play 20 yards down the field, but if Trubisky can run the ball for 20 to 25 yards. That's okay right now. That's okay. Ultimately, you want to see him make that play and eventually to protect himself. But while he's in the prime of his physical shape and his legs and his abilities, then it's dumb to waste it at this point.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski, 312-644-6767. The telephone number to call. Some phone lines open if you want to talk some Bears tonight with me. And with Mark, the sideline reporter for your Chicago Bears on WBBM home game, or every game. I shouldn't just say home games. It's all games.
I'm everywhere,
all man. 16 of them. All 16 regular season ones, and hopefully the 3 postseason ones next year as well. Joliet and Cole has thoughts on the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky. What's up tonight, Cole?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I love the show, love the Bears. And, you know, I've been listening for a while now. And earlier today, I liked what you guys were talking about, Mitchell Trubisky, and right now. You know, how he's developing, and now he's finally got that coaching staff that'll teach him, you know, make him make the right decisions, let him read down the field. I mean, he's getting better at it. You know, he had a couple bad throws every once in a while, but he's super young. He's super talented. And, you know, people early on were giving him a lot of, you know, bad talk to his name, but I love him. I love what he's doing, and I love what he's going to grow into.
Thanks, yeah. Cole.
I have confidence in him. I don't know if he's ever going to be great. But I have confidence in what Mitch Trubisky is going to be. I have confidence in what this offense is going to be. Should take a significant step next year, I think, performance-wise, consistency-wise. You didn't see that this year. You saw signs here or there that Lions game was great, Buccaneers game was great, beat up some bad defenses along the way. But you didn't see anything consistency. Like consistency for next year is going to be such a key and such a part of it that I think it's going to be shown a heck of a lot more than it was this year just based off of natural development. Like you kind of pointed out, it wasn't just Trubisky's first year of that offense. All the free agents, the huge offseason the Bears had.
Right.
Trey Burton, your first year running with this. Oh, first year for Anthony Miller being drafted in the second round. First year for Allen Robinson playing in this offense. Like, guess what? They are all probably going to grow, some more than others. But they should all grow as next year gets here.
Allen Robinson will probably eventually be a 1,000-yard receiver for the Bears. He missed three games this year, and he had around 750 yards receiving. I want to say he was the number one targeted Bears receiver this year, as it turned out. But all those guys were sort of bunched together in the 700. He and Tariq Cohen and Taylor Gabriel, and then you had Anthony Miller, who ended up leading the team in touchdown catches. So there was really good things that were starting to happen with the offense, but it's certainly not where it's ultimately going to end up being, or else I think it's going to be a disappointment. I mean, and you saw Trubisky. When you look at the statistics for the top receivers on the Bears, and you'll see that the ball was spread around really well, and everybody sort of bunched up together statistically, which is a good sign. I think eventually Robinson probably has to be your 1,000-yard guy and has to be continue to be the number one targeted guy and make the big plays, but it's really kind of cool to see Trubisky and how he has spread the ball around to those guys.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, Robinson, part of that's going to be being on the field, availability. Missed damn near all of last season. This year, he missed some decent amount of time with the Bears as well. Hopefully you can get him for closer to 16 games a season and be able to chase that 1,000 yards or north of 1,000 yards. 312-644-6767. Southside we go. Pat wants to talk Trubisky and Bears. What's up, Pat?
What's up, fellas? You know, a long-time Bears fan. I've been watching a lot of these quarterbacks. Trubisky kind of reminds me of a right-handed Steve Young.
Okay. I don't think that's crazy. I don't know that he's going to have a Steve Young career, but no, you're right. Steve Young early in his career was more run happy, I think, than even Trubisky is at this point. And you're right. He was athlete first and then quarterback second, and then he put it all together.
Yeah, his body type just reminds me of it. And I think when he starts seeing more defenses and starts learning the league, he's going to start coming around and throwing the ball a lot better.
Okay. Appreciate the telephone call there, Pat. Yeah, that's
not bad.
That would be okay. I would be fine if his career worked out to be Steve Young.
Yeah.
You're looking at the Hall of Fame quarterback one day. I would take that. But in terms of just their style of play, like Steve Young, I don't know, you remember this 49ers team that they won the Super Bowl that he was starting quarterback of anyway. Obviously, he was a backup on a couple of their other Super Bowl winners. But like you think of Steve Young, and you think of, oh, well, you had Jerry Rice, and they had ridiculous targets. You had Ricky Waters on that team.
John Taylor.
John Taylor, and they had an awesome offense and whatnot. Like, you kind of forget that Steve Young, how damn mobile he was. And, like, before Michael Vick got to the NFL, that was your, really, him and Randall Cunningham were your two examples of running quarterbacks. Guys that could successfully take off and run with the football with sustained success with it. Those were pretty much your only two guys. And, I mean, Steve Young was, for a short window anyway, until the concussions really caught up with him. Like, that was the elitist of elite in the NFL.
Those guys are nightmares for defensive coordinators. I mean, you ever talked to, like, as this season went on for the Bears, the opposing team's coordinators, like they said, they had to account, you know, you always hear that terminology, like having a spy. That's a real thing, and that takes a defender's attention away from what he could be doing in the secondary or along the line, and they have to keep an eye on, you know, Trubisky or whomever that particular running style quarterback is. But, yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's possible that Trubisky could have a Steve Young career, but I do think that the comparison, the raw player comparison, is pretty good, that they're both that type of guy.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski. 312-644-6767. The telephone number to call. Talking some Bears with you. Going to switch things up, get back to some Super Bowl discussion at the top of the hour as well on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Nick Szepkowski, Mark Grody with you up until 10 o'clock tonight on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com is what you have. As always, 312-644-6767. If you would like to chime in on the conversation that we've had going, lots on the Bears so far tonight, lots on Super Bowl 53. Was it a dud? Did you love it? Have all of that to discuss with you. We'll continue to do that in the 9 o'clock hour as well. 312-644-6767. Is your telephone number to call. One thing that we have not yet touched on, Bears-wise, happens to be what seems to be the most obvious change and obvious fix that's coming this offseason, but isn't necessarily going to be the easiest fix or solution to be found this offseason.
The kicker situation is more complicated than it appears, because the obvious parts, like you're saying, is that Cody Parkey probably...
It's overpaid and bad.
Right, that they... They blew it on Cody Parkey, that it wasn't worth the money that they'll still be paying him next year, the $5.2 million cap hit of dead salary cap space that goes away because of this, if assuming that they do. I mean, there's always that minuscule chance that Cody Parkey comes back, but we all know that he probably won't. So that's obvious that you're going to be looking for a new kicker. What becomes more complicated is another one of the conventional wisdom types of things here with the Bears is that since they spent all that money on Cody Parkey because of said cap hit, they're not going to do that again, that they're not going to go for somebody like Robbie Gould because the guy is too expensive, or Steven Gostkowski, or even Adam Vinatieri is a guy who is available. Sebastian Janikowski is available.
There you go.
Those
rip his hamstring while kicking.
Right. I don't think they would go for him anyway. But all those guys, if they were to, those would be very expensive options. So if you're a Bears fan, or if you are the Bears brass, you're thinking there's no way we're going to be stupid enough to spend that kind of money on a kicker again. However, if you are in a winning window, a potential championship window, it's like baseball, where if you're a winning team, you better have a good closer. If you are a potential winning football team in the NFL, you think that you can go all the way, you better have a good kicker. My point is I think that the Bears, unless they know that they're going to get a good prospect, the guy that they just signed, and his name is escaping my head. He's got a cool name, too. I want to say Robert Redford. No, it is Redford
Close
Jones.
Close to Redford. Redford Jones, yeah, is what you're looking for.
Redford Jones. And maybe Redford Jones is going to be a star. I don't know. I didn't know much about Cody Parkey when they brought him in. Maybe they would draft a kicker. And I
Redford
know that,
Jones so, sounds a hell of a lot more badass than Cody Parkey ever sounded.
Totally.
I know that.
Right.
I don't know if he can kick worth a damn,
right,
but he sounds a hell of a lot more badass.
He is Redford Jones. There's no doubt about that. You are correct. But they have to get this right. And it sounds obvious, but that, you know, usually the kicker is just something you can blow off in an off season, or just kind of go about it at your own pace and figure it out, and people generally just kind of trust you. And I was like that with Cody Parkey. Like, I didn't have any issues whatsoever with the signing of Cody Parkey. I was like, okay, that's cool. It's a kicker. But now you have to look at it with a magnifying glass, and maybe you do have to take the hit. Maybe you do have to pay Robbie Gould to be your kicker. Maybe you do have to use one of your seventh-round picks to get a kicker in here. It stinks to have to think that way, but it does become more complicated. And don't just rule out paying big money to a kicker this year, because you can't have what happened this year happen next year again.
Yeah, that can't be your limiting factor. It's like Florida State was way back in the day. They used to always have those wide lefts against Miami. Oh, Florida State's going to win the national championship this year, and then it'd be a shanked field goal.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can't go down in football history and missed a Super Bowl opportunity in this window simply because of the kicker. You can't be the Minnesota Vikings, and I get it, Gary Anderson was the best kicker in the league that year, but he misses the field goal, and that Vikings team that went 15-1 didn't get a chance at the Super Bowl because they missed a field goal, essentially. Like, you can't let this window pass that we talk about and look at the Bears and, all right, it should be sustainability the next couple of years here. The window should be open. You can't leave that stone unturned.
Yeah, you know what? And nobody was mad at Ryan Pace for this one this year, because I think that obviously all the anger has been directly towards, and with a bullet, towards Cody Parkey for what he did. And then, of course, going on the Today Show didn't help him at all. So, and I'm cool with that, because like I said, I can't get mad now about Cody Parkey because I supported it when he was signed. The point is there will be heavy criticism if he doesn't get it right this year. Like, just like last year. Like, last year was a clutch off season for Ryan Pace. Not just the obvious with Khalil Mack, but with the bringing in of Allen Robinson and Trey Burton, and the moving up to draft Anthony Miller, and the continued development and the hit on Tariq Cohen and Eddie Jackson. Like, it was a great year for Ryan Pace. But if he doesn't get this kicker, and it stinks to have to say, if he doesn't get the stinking kicker right, then this time it's on him. This time it's on him, and he doesn't get the same pass.
Yeah, doesn't get the same pass, and I mean, it's not like it's a position that he's done particularly well in. You look years past, and it's Connor Barth the season before. Like, he had the whole thing. Who was it that they signed from Tampa Bay? I always forget his name.
Roberto
Aguayo.
Is that who it was?
Forget it was. Yeah. But I mean, it was just like, this has been a recurring theme for the Bears.
Oh, yeah. They haven't been able to get this part right.
I hate being this guy, but okay, I was on board. I understood why Robbie Gould wasn't brought back. He was making a ton of money. It was change of a culture, change away from the old ways of the Bears.
And he was missing field goals.
And he wasn't good that year.
Right.
And it's kicking is a position where it's, all right, yes, Robbie Gould was the best kicker in Bears history. No doubt about it. But he also wasn't good. Had he not been good that following year, when you think you're supposed to be turning a corner and in contention for something, like, then you're going to be ticked off about that. I don't hate the idea of a team that needed help so many other places going and finding a cheaper option at kicker at that point. Like, I can't just play a different history of what the Bears were at that point and what Robbie Gould appeared to be headed towards at that point either, because it's convenient now at this point. No, he was bad that year. He was making a lot of money, and the Bears had a lot of holes that they needed to fill and could save money kicker-wise to get what they thought would be close to the same production. He's ended up turning his career back around and going back to the accuracy that he was known for, and the Bears have had struggles to fill that need ever since.
Yeah, and somebody brings up from the 708, Grody last night showed even Legatron can miss. Yeah, no, he did miss a big, 47-yard field goal, but you're also not – you're not in the Super Bowl without old Greg the Leg with his game tying field goal in the NFC title game, and then the ultimately a 57-yard freaking field goal in overtime to put that team, the Rams, into the Super Bowl. So yeah, I mean, of course you're going to miss, but I think Legatron works better in the case that we're making, because that guy, man, I mean, he's allowed to have that nickname, considering Greg Zuerlein doing what he did throughout the season. I think he actually missed one at Soldier Field, but he made some some huge hits as well. And I think he was 2 for 3 at Soldier Field that night. But, yeah, he's the type of guy that maybe you can find Greg Zuerlein, because I didn't know anything about Greg Zuerlein going into the season. Maybe you can find that guy. And maybe Pace deserves the benefit of the doubt considering what the all-star year that he had with this entire team from top to bottom, except for the kicker situation. But, you know, you got to get it right, period.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Plenty of Bears conversation to come in the 9 o'clock hour, as well as Super Bowl 53. Some craziness from it that we're yet to even discuss 3 hours into our show tonight. Give us a call, 312-644-6767. All that to come in the 9 o'clock hour next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.